Honesty, how ye? Welcome back to the Candlelit Tales podcast, where we tell Irish myths and legends and folklore and talk about them afterwards. My name is Aaron and I'm one half of the storytelling duo that makes up this group. And this episode is the start of a brand new series where we're digging into a new character that we've mentioned before, the great High King Cormac MacArt. And this is the very first story of the new series where we meet his parents, Art, son of Conn, and Octin, daughter of Ulk Acha, the famous druid. Lots of names there, but don't you worry. This podcast is supported by our Patreon supporters. You can go over to patreon.com/candidtales to support this channel, or you can make a one-off donation through the PayPal button on our website. All donations are greatly received and appreciated. Thank you very much if you're a supporter already. But you can also support this channel by liking, subscribing, commenting, or sharing them with someone you like who might like the story. So, sit back, relax, and enjoy the story. Preparations for war were being made down in Mag Mukrama, east of Galway. Now today, the king of all Ireland was fighting off a dispute, a claim to his throne. Art, son of Conn of the Hundred Battles, he was the rightful ruler of all Ireland, not only from being the son of a great king. The many great stories he had gathered around him, Art had created a great legend for himself and wanted to leave behind an even better legacy than his father. On travelling east, he made a stop to a wise and very well-known druid, whose name was Ulk Acha. Art was well aware that he needed both the human forces on his side and the otherworldly forces to enable him to move through this battle and leave behind him something that would last. And at night, around the fire, he asked Ulk Acha for advice, for how he would leave behind a great legacy. Ulk Acha lifted his head, smiling behind wrinkled eyes and grey hair, the shadows of the fire flickering and dancing around him. His wry smile penetrated Art's heart as if someone was speaking the truest words he had ever heard. Ulk Acha told him in no uncertain terms he needed an heir. But Art questioned this. He asked Ulk Acha why he would need an heir now, after being married to Maeve La Darrig. Maeve, who had given him the promise that by marrying her, he was the rightful ruler of Tara. The sovereign goddess of Ireland had given him her blessing to rule Ireland well. And with this, he was sure to quell any risings, any fights, anyone who might claim the throne against him, any usurper that would come and try and take the throne away. Art was sure that he had this goddess on his side and would never be defeated. Would have all the time in the world to have heirs and many heirs after that. But Ulk Acha stared back into the flame, looking at the spitting fire, the coals, the wood being eaten by the heat. And he claimed that Maeve La Darrig was half red indeed, and the redness of the flames was a symbol for the blood that he would have to spill on the plains of battle. For you might get the blessing of goddess, but you will still have to fight to keep her. These words shook his bones to his core, and Art felt sure now that he did not feel so secure in his kingship, and it was right that he came to Ulk Acha. so once again he asked for his advice. Ulk nodded in the direction of the trees, the forests, and said, "You'll find my daughter out there with the horses. Speak with Achtin tonight, and you might get the air you need." Art stood up, not sure where to go, but hearing hooves, he walked towards the darkness. He walked towards the sound of the breath of horses. And it wasn't long until the moon shone light down in between the branches of the still budding leaves in the trees. He saw a beautiful woman in between three tame horses, and still more coming out of the trees, walking towards her, calmly. She reached out her hand and placed them on the nose of the nearest horse, a red mane and dark eyes. As soon as Art came around the bend of the tree, the horses reared to see him come and ran around him and then off out into the wilderness. These horses were no tame horses. They were wild. Wild as this woman, Achtin, who stood in front of him. Her hair, not curled and not plaited, but frizzy and unfurled as her robes around her ankles. The mud-stained hands under her fingernails showed a working woman, not one that was used to prettifying herself for the pleasure of a man's gaze. And she met his gaze squarely, tilting her head, annoyed at being disrupted, annoyed that the horses had run away. But Art explained that he had been told to seek her out this night. Ulkaka, her father, had asked him to ask her for the favour of... There was no way to ask this without feeling a little awkward, he thought, but... An heir, he asked for. "Would you give me an heir?" She looked him up and down and thought, she's seen worse. She smiled and held out her hand and ushered him back to the home that was meek and made surely for their comfort that night. She told him she would lie with him, and this night they would produce his heir. The night, as the moon sank down low in the sky, was filled with passion, pleasure, and sleeping. And after, they both fell into fits of dreaming. Art was filled with blood shed, the ideas and images of battle and fighting and berserkers all around him in rage and fury. He woke in panic, a slight sweat on his skin, to see the eyes of Achtin looking at him. "Did you dream?" "I had a strange one too," she said. She had dreamt that she was standing, her feet in the ground, amongst many trees, and then her neck had changed and grown, a branch stretching high into the sky, oak leaves opening wide as a great, fierce, brilliant tree spread its arms over the whole forest canopy, over the hills, over the mountain, over all of Ireland. And the roots of this tree went down, deep down into the bedrock below where her feet had been before. And she was sure this great dream meant something, meant that she had a child. And Art confirmed, surely this would mean a great heir, a brilliant king would rule all over Ireland. And this was the legacy he was looking for. Although now he wasn't so sure he would survive the battle to come. Before he left, he told Achtin, if he did not survive, and she did grow pregnant to bring their child to Fíochna Cosán in the north, a man who would foster their child, teach him what he would need to know in this realm, in this place, in this landscape of human trials and tribulations, and rear him well enough to be king and bring on the legacy that Art wanted to gift to him. Acta nodded and agreed. It would be so, she said. She kissed him one last time. Farewell, she knew. And now Art went back to his men. He went back to the chariots, and they went back to marching against the wind, the harsh, cold spring wind that was there. They marched on through as the mountains of the east and the lakes that they saw and passed by glistened in the sunlight that didn't warm their bones. And they would keep going to Moy Mukrama to face the challenge, the uprising that would try and bring Art to his knees and dethrone him. But Art felt strong, felt accomplished, felt sure that he had enough to quell this rising. And when he gave the orders for his armies to meet the foe on the plains of Moy Mukrama, the fighting was furious. It was devastating to see the men fall. Clash of swords, the cries of death, the calls of the crows overhead, the spilling of blood into the marshy, boggy wetlands. The trees that soaked up the water were now soaking up the blood on the edges of this battle. But Art saw they could win this fight. He saw a way through until a shining light met his eyes. A shining sword that was cutting men down. This sword seemed to be wielded by one man that was more berserk, more angry, howling in rage. So much so he was led by this shining sword. A sword that wanted to feed off the frenzy of its owner and feed itself full from the blood that it was spilling on the plains of Moy Mukrama until it came to face Art. He leapt into the challenge but was felled as easily as anyone who stood against that shining blade. And as Art fell down on the plains of Moy Mukrama, bleeding his last into the ground, watering the roots of the trees, he thought his last thought of Acton and her dream, the child growing in her belly. The tree that will grow all over Ireland.
At first, it didn't slow her down. Through the summer, and the times when the stores were low, Acton preferred to be out anyway with her horses, with her herds. In the forests. She was the daughter of a druid, barely civilized, carrying a child who would, if she trusted her dreams, be a king someday. But as the year started to close in, she started to close in as well, swelling, becoming ungainly. She felt off balance, out of kilter. And she knew that this time was important. These early days, these early years. She knew that Art had wanted her to take her child away to the north. But there was time for that yet. She wanted to give birth here. In her home and her father's home, where she felt safe. Acton knew that her mother had held her, knew that her mother had fed her, although she had no memory of her mother. And so she knew that first holding, that first feeding. It seeps into the blood. She wanted her son. Whatever great destiny he was going to go on to, she wanted him rooted firmly in her, in the soil of her home, her forest, her herds and her people. So she stayed. Through the times when the forest was full of fruit, hearing news now of the new king at Tara, Louis MacCon, knowing that if he found out that Art had had a son, he'd be very interested in the boy. She stayed into the winter, when the earth grew cold and dormant, when the trees were bare, and she was swelling, bursting. And she gave birth in the dark and quiet time, with her father there with her, the druid to intercede, to draw circles of protection around her baby. He made five of them, against wounding, against fire, against the sorcery of the other world, against water that might drown him or wolves that might eat him. And she felt safe in this house in the forest, away from any fort and fortification, in her father's forest, in her own home. She felt, perhaps, too safe. With those circles of protection around her son, she didn't think of all the other ways a child could be hurt. She brought him with her when she walked. She set him down beside her when she rested. She still tired easily in those first days after the birth. She wanted so badly to be out. She had been so long a stranger in her own body. She wanted to walk. And even though the earth was hard and cold, she wanted to feel her feet on it. So she brought him with her. And she wrapped him warmly and she set him down. One day on one of her rambles in the cold forest, Acton felt that tiredness come over her. Tiredness she couldn't resist. And so she lay down. And although the ground was cold, her cloak was warm. Her baby was warm in her arms. His soft skin against hers. She curled up around him. She closed her eyes for just a moment, and the winter sun was bright above her, and the frost sparkled around, and she slipped into a dream. It seemed no time at all had passed, but when she opened her eyes, she was cold. And it took her a moment to realize there was no warm little body nestled up against her. She leapt to her feet. And there, melting the frost, were the tracks of a wolf. She followed. She knew the wolf would not hurt her baby, would not kill her baby. But her mind was racing. There were so many ways that a child could be harmed. There were so many things she had not protected him from. She lost the track. She was not a tracker. And she ran home to her father. Acton had always relied on her father's wisdom and his pragmatism and a deep ability that he had to stay unflappable in the face of everything. But sometimes she wished he would be a little more worried. And when she came to him now with her child stolen away from her, she saw her father sit there in all his wisdom, smile at her reassuringly, a reassurance that she could not feel, and tell her to trust that the wolf knew what she was doing. That there was wisdom in the wild, as much wisdom there as there is in the other world. Out of respect, she didn't argue. But out of worry for her child, she didn't stop looking. In the days that followed, she scoured far and wide, but every evening, as the cold began to draw in, she would have to go back home again to take shelter. To lie awake and fret about her son out there in the cold. There was no circle of protection against cold. There was no circle of protection against hunger.